Blog Talk Radio.
Why is American democracy under full-scale assault, and what are some of the economic factors that are driving the attacks? We'll have answers to those questions in just a few minutes. Stay with us. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace family, welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us once again and put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and how we can pass it on to our children. Join us. To join the conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.uslistenus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, and then you can click on Listen Live. You'll be in the Blog Talk Radio website at that time. My name is Sister Q, and joining me tonight, we have Brother Aunty, who, like me, is a member of UBU. Peace, Brother Aunty. How are you?
Peace, Sister Q. I'm good. It's good to be with you. Good to hear you. Good to share with the UBU family once again.
Yes, it's good to have you here with us. And I'm looking forward to the conversation because you are bringing up information that personally I hadn't thought about. So my first question to you, Brother Auntie, is why is American democracy under full-scale assault?
Thank you, Sister Q. And that's a critically important question. Let me give the short answer at the front end and then give some illustrations and some explanation as to why I say this. The short answer is American democracy is now an impediment to capitalism. The capitalist economic model is in free fall. It's disintegrating. It's deteriorating. And in order to save itself, it recognizes that an informed democratic society voting their interests, their needs, will interfere with the operation of capitalism in this late and critical stage. Now, for some some deeper understanding, Georgia is one of the leading states, and make no mistake, 43 other states across the country are doing similar things. They're passing voter repression legislation for the obvious reasons. A dwindling minority of white males are fighting desperately to hold on to political power. And what makes Georgia especially noxious is they even wrote into the law that the state legislature can take over county election boards if they deem those boards to be underperforming. So what that really is saying is that after we do all the work to get our people out to vote, if the results don't line up with what the Republicans want, they can take over the local county election board and change the results or the outcome of the election. Now, that's a direct frontal assault against the process of democracy. So what we have to understand is that whenever we are witnessing a political fight, we have to ask ourselves, at the root of this fight, what are the economic battles that are really taking place? Capitalism.
Let me interrupt, Brother Auntie. Let me ask you, you say underperforming. What does that mean?
That's a good question.
How does a county underperform? They're supposed to be getting votes, right? What is underperforming?
Right. Well, that language is not my language. That's the language that they wrote into the bill. County election boards that are underperforming, the state legislatures can step in and take over control of those local election boards. So they define who or what is meant by underperforming. And what we can, the conclusion that we have to draw is if the results are favoring the Democrats as opposed to the Republicans in the case of Georgia, then those counties can be deemed as underperforming. And we can anticipate that by and large, those counties with large Black, Latino, Asian populations that are heavily Democratic, they are going to be under the gun. And if anything, if they can find any reason to jump in and take over those local election boards, they'll do that.
So that sounds like underperforming. Underperforming is in the eye of the beholder then.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Right.
And so
we have to be wide-eyed and look exactly at what is going on, because most of the conversation around these voter repression laws has to do with them eliminating lockbox drop locations, making it harder to do mail-in ballots, and all of those measures will certainly shave the number of minority voters, right? Keep in mind that Joe Biden only won the state of Georgia by 12,000 votes. So if they can figure out a way to reduce the number of Black voters, by just 12,000 votes. Then even though Georgia sent two Democratic senators to the Senate, that could be changed in 2022. So we see this very blatant, in-your-face taking over of the electoral process. And we have to ask ourselves the question, why are they doing that? Now, obviously, they're doing that to restrict and to limit the black voting power. But more importantly, for decades, capitalism has been doing three things through the political process. One, when they elect politicians that are beholden to corporate interests, one of the things that they do is they begin to deregulate various industries. So, for example, under the Trump administration, most of the environmental protections for clean air, clean water, worker safety on the job, a lot of those regulations were rolled back. And so one of the key components of this corporate agenda, which has been carried by and large by the Republican Party, has been deregulation, right? The second thing that their politicians do is they cut the budgets. So you hear all this talk about small government, and they slash the budget for education and child welfare services and social services, all in the name of balanced budgets, and we've got to be fiscally conservative and this, that, and the third. But what they are doing is shrinking the size of government because they don't want government to interfere with the operation of these corporations and their ability to maximize profits. And the third thing they do is they privatize formerly government services. So you see in some counties, some cities, the sanitation department that used to be a county job or a city job has been taken over by a private company. And where, for example, on a route you might have a driver of the truck and two workers picking up the garbage, now they've put in these trucks that you just have a driver and an arm comes out, picks up the garbage, dumps it in the truck, puts the container back on the sidewalk. So by privatizing these formerly government functions, they have allowed the private sector to start taking over the public sector in order for them to find new ways to generate profits into the private coffers. And so that's the agenda that they're working on. And democracy is a direct impediment to their ability to do that. And so we have to be very clear and not be fooled by all the smoke and mirrors about what the agenda is. And so recently we've seen this crazy situation where, for example, the Major League Baseball pulled out the All-Star game from Georgia and set it up in Colorado. And so you have these Republican senators and state officials all bent out of shape and saying, you know, that's wrong and corporations should stay out of politics. The moment that those words came out of their mouths, everybody should have said, you better stop your lying. Because the only reason that they're in power is because the corporations have funded their campaign to the tune of millions of dollars for decades. So it gets a little complicated because now you've got to scratch your head and say, well, why are the politicians that were put in office by these same forces, why are they now seemingly in this fight with corporations who are trying not to look as the demons that they are? And saying, yes, we really should support democracy. But the truth of the matter is that those Republicans who are in office got their funds to run their campaigns from the corporations, and they've been doing the bidding of the corporations. And so it really puts black people and Latin people and Asians and other people of color at a tremendous disadvantage, because what is happening is that the mechanisms that we used to use to improve the conditions of life for ourselves and our children are being snatched away. And it's only going to increase as we go forward.
Yeah, so it sounds as you said, a distraction to take the voting population's mind off the fact that actually the corporations and the politicians are in the game together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll pause here if there may be some questions. Anyone trying to get into the conversation, Sister Q?
Yes, it looks like we do have a caller. Please hold on a minute. Okay. Caller with the number 8673, please state your name and where you're calling from.
0673?
Yes. Your name and where you're calling from, please.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you well.
Yeah, Brother Kevlar from Gabriel Prosser City. I look at corporations as bookies, and they don't lose because they play both sides, Republican and Democrats. And so we talk about assault against African people. I wonder how come I'm always hearing reference to the Republicans as if the Democrats are not assaulting us as well. So I wonder what the cause point over there, because I heard it mentioned Republicans numerous times as if the Democrats are passive. So that's the one I want to comment on that.
Brother, you're absolutely right, and which is why the Democratic Party cannot really meet the needs of black folks and poor folks and other groups of color. The Democrats have done pretty much the same thing when they've been in power since certainly the Clinton years. And we know it was under Clinton that some of the most egregious policies were put into place. Three strikes, you're out. They changed the banking regulations, allowing banks to speculate. And so you're absolutely right. Both the Democrats and the Republicans are controlled by these corporations. Our challenge has been how to find a lever to at least begin to push one of the parties in a way that begins to open some opportunities for ourselves. And that's what is being stripped away right now in the current climate. So, yes, the Democrats are guilty of the same thing, and that's, you really see that very clearly when you look at the foreign policy. The Biden foreign policy is not going to look a whole lot different from the Trump foreign policy. I mean, it won't be as gross or as crude, but when it comes to capitalism and this business of controlling other countries and creating coup d'etats and bringing down, for example, the killing of Gaddafi and all this manipulation in the Middle East and this staunch support for Israel, while Palestinians are being mowed down in the streets, it's very clear that the corporate agenda is driving American politics. So you're absolutely right, brother. It's not that the Republicans are the bad guys and the Democrats are the good guys. Some of us are old enough to remember when the party that was in power in the South was the Democrats, and they called themselves Dixiecrats. And so when they could no longer exert influence through the Democratic Party, they switched over to the Republican Party and continued to do the same thing. So you're right. But the point that we want to make is that the reason that democracy is under assault is because this idea of people voting to do the things that they need to get done, capitalism has reached the point where that is an impediment. It doesn't allow them to maximize profit, and therefore it will go by the wayside. And we are witnessing that shift, and we need to understand the implications of how important that is in terms of what do we do, not only here in the United States, but around the globe, in Africa, you know, how do we position ourselves to resist the onslaught of this rapacious capitalism as it extracts resources, as it extracts labor, and really shuts down the ability for Black people and African people to be self-determining and sovereign. So thank you for the question, and I hope we, you know, that kind of sets it, puts it into a more balanced perspective.
Oh yeah, you really responded appropriately. I mean, you made things clear, and I think it made it more open for questions, right, to be balanced and not focus so much on one both parties have been sticking us. But yeah, you made it very clear. You brought some points out that I forgot about. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you for your comment and question.
Sister
okay.
Q, yeah, yes. Now we've said that the first point that we're trying to make is that democracy is under assault, and it looks
mm-hmm.
like a political fight. But the point we want our listeners to understand is what's really going on is an economic fight.
Absolutely.
The corporate agenda, through the control of the political apparatus, has an agenda. Deregulation, privatization, budget cutting. But even that is not enough, and it gets even worse. So let's take a break, and when we come back from the break, we'll go into part two, because it really is all connected.
Okay, so we don't wore you out, huh? Okay. Here's a couple of minutes of music. Get yourself some water or something. But we'll be right back.
Thank you, sister. Appreciate you.
We're back. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone to make a comment or to ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. Okay, Brother Ankti, so let's get back in it. I don't have to ask you no questions.
Okay.
All right, going.
So the point we were making is that democracy is going to be a victim to late-stage capitalist exploitation, And the goal is to put in what they call an authoritarian strongman, like a Bolsonaro or Trump. Begin to give us an idea of what that would look like in the United States. But he was so crass and so crude and so stupid that, you know, that didn't work. But a more sophisticated version of that is waiting in the wings, and we can be sure. So not only do we see this erosion of the democratic process in the United States, but here's the real global issue driving everything that is really driving the entire geopolitical landscape, and that is global warming. And, you can use the term global warming. You can use the term impending climate collapse or climate catastrophe. Whatever terminology that you're using, let's just say for right now, climate collapse, demands that America cut its fossil fuel emissions by 50% by 2030. Now, global warming is a phenomenon that affects the entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
What we are saying is that if we don't get a handle on global warming, it poses what we call an existential threat to the existence of the human species, not just North America, the United States, but South America, the Caribbean, Africa, Asia, Europe, the entire human species has got to begin to address the crisis of global warming, right? And yes. And we've already lost 4 years fooling around with Trump. The pandemic or the plandemic, whichever term you're most comfortable with, is going to cost us another year of focusing on other issues. And the truth of the matter is, if we have not, as a planet, reduced fossil fuel emissions by 50% by 2030, 2035 at the outside, we're going to start seeing such extreme weather events that millions of people will be displaced from their homes and turned into climate refugees. We're already seeing the leading edge of that phenomena by the thousands of people that have marched from Central America, mainly from Honduras and El Salvador, through Mexico, arriving at the United States southern border. Now, the politicians have framed this as the riffraff of Mexico and Central America banging on the doors of banging on the doors at the southern border, trying to infiltrate the United States, and that could not be further from the truth.
They came
the truth
for free
of the matter
stuff.
Is nobody puts their family on their back and takes what few possessions they have left and walks 1,000 miles not knowing what's going to happen. But because of global warming, there has been a drought for the last 5 years in Central America. The land that they used to farm is bone dry. It's cracked. It's parched. It looks like a desert. It will not produce crops. These people have been thrown off of the land, which used to be their source of income. They've been driven into these cities in Central America. The United States, by funding these paramilitary groups throughout Central America and Mexico, have rendered the cities inhabitable, so the people are forced to walk to the southern borders, praying, hoping somehow they can get some relief, some asylum. So, but what we have to understand is they are climate refugees. And the same way Katrina drove thousands of people out of New Orleans and Louisiana, I mean, there are people living in parts of Texas and Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia today that were driven there because of Hurricane Katrina. And why was Hurricane Katrina so bad? Because global warming has increased the temperature of the oceans so that when there are storms, they are far more severe. that's just the tip of the iceberg of what is coming if we don't get a handle on global warming. Now, let me just give some information so people have a very clear understanding of the science causing this problem to be so severe. The first number is 2 degrees Celsius, or that's about 3.5 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit. That is when we get beyond that range in terms of climate temperature, all of the climate systems begin to go haywire. It changes the currents. It changes the water cycles. It changes the temperature in the oceans. It changes the salinity in the oceans. And we reach a tipping point where we can't reverse it. And so that's the number that people have to keep foremost in their minds. We can't go beyond that 2 degrees Celsius limit. And right now we're at about 1.5. We don't have a lot to play. The second number I want people to plug into their memory banks is 565 gigatons. A gigaton is a billion tons. In other words, what we're talking about is there is a – if you think about how you have a family budget and you budget a certain amount to get you through the month, let's just say it's $1,500. And when you hit that $1,500, you're out of money. The planet has a limit. It can absorb about another 565 gigatons of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases before it triggers these catastrophic climate events. And at the rate that we are putting fossil fuels into the atmosphere, we have till about 2040, 2045 before we hit that 565 gigaton limit, in which case it's game over, full stop, you know, grab your mama, grab your daughter, grab your wife, whoever, it's too late, right? So we haven't hit the 565 gigaton range yet, but we're inching our way there, and we don't have a lot of time to slow the train down. The last number is 2,795 gigatons. Now, what is that? That's the amount of CO2 and fossil fuel emissions that's currently on the books of the oil and gas corporations. What am I saying? When you look at ExxonMobil, when you look at Shell, when you look at these other oil companies and gas companies and energy companies, they have in their inventory 2,795 gigatons of fuel that they want to burn. And the key is they have already based their profit tables on extracting this 2,795 gigatons in order for them to meet their profit goals. So their behavior is in direct contradiction to what the needs of the entire planet are. And the question is, are they going to continue extracting fossil fuel and pushing these CO2 emissions into the atmosphere, driving up the temperature, or are they going to have a come-to-Jesus moment and say, you know, hey, if we burn all this fuel, we're going to incinerate the planet.
But we'll be rich when we do it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We'll be rich.
That's their mindset.
We'll be happy and we'll be
rich
sad
when we do it.
Right, yeah. And so when you see them talking about we're going to colonize the moon and colonize Mars, we just think that's a romantic idea that these super rich people are toying around with. No. They understand that they want to make this profit. They don't care who dies in the process. We, on the other hand, who make up the 99%, we don't have a choice. This simply has to be brought under control. Let me stop there. There may be questions, and I've thrown quite a bit of information out there, and somebody may want to ask what I'm talking about.
No, we don't have any other questions right now. So go ahead.
So that's the crisis that's confronting the entire human. How do we cut greenhouse gases by 50% by 2035? And if you notice, that is not a conversation that's going on in corporate media. No one is talking about we've got about 8 years, 8 to 10 years to make some very dramatic changes, or we're going to see some weather events and some wildfires and hurricanes and tornadoes and water surges, typhoons. We can't even begin to imagine what the planet is going to look like if we don't bring these greenhouse gases and fossil fuel emissions under control. Now, that sounds pretty dire, but there is good news.
And
the good news is this. The good news is this. You and I, okay, and everyone on this call and who's living in 2021, we are a privileged group of people because we are living through one of the most important epochs in all of human history.
Okay.
We are on the brink of witnessing a shift in the human mode of production. This only happens every 500, every 1,000 years or so. We are smack dab in the middle of a shift in the terms of the mode of production of the human species. And what am I mean when I say mode of production? It's simply how does a society or a country or a civilization organize itself to produce the resources it needs to meet its material needs in order to feed, clothe, shelter, provide energy, education for their children, health care for their elders. How do people organize themselves to do this critical task?
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to understand, this is not stuff they taught us in school, modes of production, we've already lived through several of them as a species. For example, the earliest civilizations, going way back 10,000, 20,000 years, they were hunters and gatherers. The technological advancement was limited, and so basically they walked around and took the fruit off the trees and ate it. Or if they, you know, if their fruit wasn't there and they couldn't forage for you know, vegetation, then they had to track something down and eat it. You know, you could outrun it and kill it, you could eat it. So they were basically hunting and gathering. That was a mode of production that we used for thousands of years. But that gave way. That gave way to slavery, which was vicious to be sure, but it allowed societies to be stationary. They could live in the same place for long periods of time, and it enabled them to become more technologically advanced. But it reached the point where the slaves said, hey, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of you riding my back. And so they overthrew that mode of production. And another mode of production that was called feudalism came into being, and where the people were no longer owned directly by the slave master. They were tied to the land. And so whoever the landlord was, that's who was the one that controlled their livelihood. Feudalism gave way to capitalism, right? And capitalism will give way to cooperative economic model. That is the historical evolution that is taking place as we speak tonight. Whether Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos like it or not, capitalism is going to evolve into a more progressive economic model, and it's going to be based on cooperation. And so we are poised in Us Lifting Us because our work is to build cooperative enterprises, that is family-centered, group-owned businesses that supply our basic needs. So heretofore, this change from these change from modes of production have been, they can be very violent. We've seen revolution. But we are at a place, I think, in terms of the technological sophistication of society, that with nuclear weapons and chemicals of mass destruction, that we're going to have to find a way to change the mode of production without killing half the population on the planet in the process. And so the people, the 1% who are enjoying the current economic organization, they are not the ones leading the conversation about how do we cut greenhouse emissions by 50%, how do we move the economy into a more progressive economy. They're not part of that conversation. They hate that with a passion. The people who need it the most will have to be the ones who drive this change. In other words, black folks, African folks, Latino folks, people in Central America, all of us, indigenous populations, poor folks, the 99% is up to us to change the economic mode of production, because the current mode will kill us and will destroy the planet. And so it's going to change whether they like it or not. And if you and I don't do a thing, if we don't lift a finger to help the process tonight, it still won't matter. This is going to happen. It is inexorable. So, it is scientifically ordained. What we are doing in Ulu is we recognize that this shift has come, that the ancestors have brought us to a place where we can be the impetus, the force that pushes this and starts the chain reaction to bring us out of the dark ages of capitalism and bring us into a more progressive economic system. So that's the point when I said, you know, the good news is, and we see it even in North America in terms of, that's why the Bernie Sanders campaign generated the momentum that it did, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Squad. They are advocating the kinds of policies that benefit the majority of the people. Medicare for all, to eliminate student debt, to make education available through the bachelor's degree free. These kinds of social changes so that the majority of the people have a chance to live. And as more and more people begin to recognize that the rich are not going to organize the world in a way that benefits everybody, that's simply not in their self-interest. So it's up to us who find ourselves oppressed and exploited and brutalized to say, hey, enough of that. There's a better way for all of us to live. And we simply have to do it, because if we don't, back to the crisis in global warming, the planet will incinerate and will throw off the human species.
Okay. So, Brother Anthony, we're going to take another quick music break. And when we come back, I'd like you to tell us how Ulu fits in to this new economic paradigm.
I'm life. Fight, we have to fight with all we might. Fight, we have to fight, we have to fight. Fight to keep our talent for our sight.
Welcome back to Dare to Win, where we are all freed up fighters. So, Brother Ankti, you've explained to us the new mode of production that will answer all of the problems created by the capitalist and the democratic system and their desire for more and more capital. Tell us how ULU works within this new mode of production that you talk about, the capital, the cooperative economic model.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Q. And let's see. The first thing that I want to say is when we build cooperative businesses, when people become a member of ULU and they pay their $50 annual membership, and then as quickly as they can, they purchase a co-op unit for $1,000. Each person who purchases a co-op unit becomes an owner of the means of production. Okay. I talked about mode of production. Now I just said means of production. The means of production are just that, the factories, the land, the tools, the computers, the robots, the technology, the human labor. Those are means of production. The problem that we are living under right now is the majority of people do not control the means of production. And, and black folks are running around here thinking and pretending and acting like we're free. And I'm so glad we had Brother Ezra Aharon on our annual meeting and convention this past March 12th, 13th, and 14th, because he told us that what we are living through right now is chattel freedom. In other words, at one point during slavery in the United States, black people themselves were the means of production. We were the labor. And because we were considered chattel, we were considered property. We weren't considered human. That's why Derek Chauvin can put his knee on the neck of George Floyd for 9 minutes with his hands in his pockets like nothing is happening, because chattel, the owner can do with the property what the owner wants to do. And no one says anything about that. So that George Floyd reminds every black person that we are still chattel in the eyes of the people who control the economy, because we don't control the means of production. The beauty of us lifting us is that as we organize and open cooperative businesses that are family-owned, family-centered, group-owned, collectively-owned, those businesses become the means of production. In other words, we are owner members of the cooperative, and each cooperative is an instrument of economic and political power. Our participation in the cooperative itself throws off the burden of being chattel. It erases it. It eliminates it. We become sovereign women and men operating our own business institutions, circulating our money in our own community. and we stand on our own two feet, owing no one anything other than ourselves. And setting an example for our children, this is how sovereign women and men conduct themselves in the world. And so if we don't develop these cooperative institutions, we remain enslaved in the capitalist institutions of the very people who have defined us as chattel. So the good news is that the ancestors and the universe has brought us to a tipping point, to a crisis, where something has to give. And I like the way the Chinese characters for crisis, it means dangerous opportunity. That's where we find ourselves in 2021. We are in a moment of a dangerous opportunity, and the opportunity is to build our own economic institution. But if we turn around and build capitalist businesses, we've only re-enslaved ourselves. So we have to build these cooperative models. And the good news, the thing that gets me excited, Sister Q, is that we don't have to ask the White House, the Supreme Court, the Congress, corporate leaders. We don't have to ask permission of anybody to do this. And with $1.3 trillion flowing through our hands each and every year, we have more money flowing through the hands of black folks in the United States than several African countries combined.
Right.
We are rich. You know, somebody said, you need some richness. You know, I won't use the N-word. But we have money.
Yeah, sure.
We have money. Let's be honest. And what we are organizing ourselves to say, hey, we're gonna, like Marcus Garvey showed us in the 1920s, when they sold those bonds, and with that money, they bought the Black Star shipping line with the idea that they were going to conduct commerce between Africans in the United States and the Caribbean and Africa. It was a bold vision, a compelling vision, and black folks thronged to it. 6 million and more joined Garvey's UNIA because they had a taste of what it is to be sovereign men and women. This is what ULU represents. It's the UNIA of 2021, and the vision is to build a global shipping line called Us Lifting Us, a series of cooperative businesses linked together that are collectively owned by African people and people of African descent, owned by us, operated by us, for us, and we begin to organize the planet in such a way that life becomes sustainable once again. We're not going to extract all the oil and we're not going to pollute the air and the water. There's a way of meeting our material needs that allows the planet to live for thousands and thousands of years. But we have to be in the driver's seat. Right, we've done it before. Yes. And we have to be in the driver's seat. We know how to do this because, as you said, we've done it before. And the question is, it's a matter of, do we have the will to look each other in the face and say, let's do this. Here's my money. I'm putting it in the pot. You put yours in the pot. Every time 1,000 of us put in $1,000, that's $1 million. We can build a lot of businesses. And we can imagine what our community will look like when you go down the street and you buy your groceries in a cooperative business that you own. You go to put gas or electricity. You know, you've got an electric vehicle and you plug into the electric station and it says, Us Lifting Us Electric Outlet. When you go to buy your clothing, you're in a store that is a ULU store. All of the things that supply our needs are operated by Us Lifting Us Enterprises. And that's a powerful vision of how we reorganize ourselves on the planet. And even if you don't join Us Lifting Us, get into a cooperative, because that is the only economic model that is sustainable going into the future. These capitalistic models they're exhausted, they are dying out, and unfortunately they are dragging the society down with them. We have a moment to make a huge difference, and I'm betting that we're going to do this.
Brother Ankhi, we have a caller. We're going to take
greetings. This Go is right.
Okay. Caller number 5663. State your name and where you're calling from, please.
Greetings. This is Nobantu Ankawanda calling from Decatur, Georgia. I was very inspired by Auntie's presentation. It gave me a lot of things to think about in terms of all the movements that we're about. Now, my question is, how does ENCOBRA, reparations, how does that fit in, and how could it fit in the model of the co-op? I mean, how do we get the folks who are working on reparations to understand the need to co-op our economic system? And the same with the Pan-African Federalist Movement, talking about uniting Africa, because this model is crucial to the survival, as well as getting our folks to understand, you know, issues around climate control. I mean, you laid it out there, brother, and really appreciate that. So that's my question.
Mama Nabantu, you raised an important question, and I'm so glad to hear your voice on the call. And for those on the call who may not know Mama Nabantu, she's extremely active in a number of African-centered, Pan-African organizations and initiatives, and particularly right now with the Pan-African Federalist Movement, and which Ulu was a part of. And so, Mama Nabantu, I'm so glad that we as a people can walk and chew bubble gum at the same time. And what I mean by that is we can do the reparations work at the same time we build cooperatives. It's not one or the other. It's both and. And right. There are some people who understand the reparations piece inside and out. And it's certainly a necessary component of our movement. The Pan-African Federalist Movement has the same question. If we're going to break out of neo-colonial relationships with the former colonial masters, we're going to have our own economy. We can't continue to call ourselves a sovereign if we are conducting our business affairs through the Bank of England and through these other European central banking systems. We are going to have to create our own economic infrastructure. And heretofore, that has been, we've been, you know, scratching our heads trying to figure out how to do that. The good news about the cooperative movement, and Ulu in particular, is that it's voluntary. You know, when people become conscious enough to understand that this is the only way forward, and they change their behavior, now we're talking revolution. And when significant groups of people in the thousands and the tens of thousands begin to move in a unified way, watch and see how that changes the reparation conversation. Well, let's have this meeting on reparations. How much y'all saying you want now? You know, it's a power struggle. And to the degree that they, you know, what did Frederick Douglass say? Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. So Ulu, or the cooperative economic model, becomes our demand. And we're saying, because when we really dig into the essence of what this economy, this global African economy is, it is the expression of the internal intrinsic wealth of black folks. If we look at what black folks have done through hip-hop, that's a multi-billion-dollar industry driven by African creative genius. You take that out of the equation, and these hillbillies are twanging around on banjo sounding like, you know, something that happened 100 years ago. So it is our essence. The wealth on the planet is not in the diamonds and the oil and the bauxite. The wealth of the planet is in us. And so when we organize ourselves economically, what is revealed is how wealthy we really are. And we could reach a point in a generation or two where we would say, you know what? We're going to take the reparations simply because you guys need to acknowledge the crime that you committed against our humanity. But quiet as a kept, we don't really need it. You know, you go give us $30 billion, we're already worth $30 trillion. We've generated that, you know, by trading with ourselves. So I think, Mama DeBonto, to come down to your point, as I understand the reparations piece, certainly is the way that Randall Robinson lays it out, is the first is the acknowledgement that slavery was a crime against humanity, against our humanity, right? And that reparations are owed. There is a need to repair the damage that was done. And we can drive that conversation. But at the same time, we can't wait for their expressions of repair. We have to do some self-repair ourselves. And in my way of thinking, I think in terms of what Ulu is pushing and driving towards is that Ulu is a way for us to do self-repair by creating our own economy and generating our own wealth. And then, you know, if you factor onto that the possibilities of this black cryptocurrency called Guapcoin, it becomes really, really exciting, really fascinating. And so the future is bright. I mean, the ancestors are jumping up and down, screaming and shouting because they have brought us to this point. And so we're going to win the reparations fight. We're going to win the build the economy fight. We're certainly going to win the formation of the United African States. That's coming. And all of us get to play a part in that work. So the only thing I think you would agree is we got to spread the word, and get people informed and excited and committed to doing whatever they can to push this forward. I hope I spoke to your issue, Nabanto.
Brother, Auntie, we're almost out of time. Could you tell us how one becomes a member owner of Ulu, and then we will have to say good night. We'll have to end this session, and we'll be back next week for another session.
Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Yep. Go to our website, usliftingus.com. Check out the information there, the mission, what we're about, how we're organizing this, and then click the Join tab. Like I said earlier, it's a $50 annual membership fee. That gets you into the co-op. And once you come in, we'll find a place for you to work and make a contribution. And along the way, help you organize your finances so that you can purchase a co-op unit. And as we grow, thousands and thousands and thousands, we envision Ulu becoming a multi-billion-dollar global economic cooperative owned and operated and controlled by and for African descended people. So that's where we're going. Again, usliftingus.com will get you to our website, and we look to see you on the other side. Sister Q, we've had fun tonight. Thank you for your energy and thank the callers who called in and added to the conversation.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to what we'll do next week.
Yes, and we didn't get to everybody, but we appreciate everybody that desired to join us on the call. And as we said, we'll be back next Thursday, and we hope you will join us next Thursday, and we will get to talk to you. Peace.
Peace.